This is My Kind of Weird, a podcast where two people swap and pitch three types of media: something watchable, something readable, and something listenable, to see if at the end of the pod each person says, "That's my kind of weird." I'm your host, Anthony Pollock, and joining me today is voice actor Melissa Medina.
Hello.
Melissa, are you ready to get weird with me?
Absolutely, I live for it.
Fantastic. All right, Melissa, present your something watchable.
Okay, my something watchable was Agretzko. Have you seen it before?
I haven't, but I think there's a comic book out of it. I think I've read that, but yeah. I'm correcting myself here. I think I've maybe seen an episode.
Okay. Yeah, so I guess I'll explain it. I just love Agretzko for a lot of reasons, probably for selfish reasons, that it is essentially like the story of my life all through my 20s. I mean, like, everything.
How so?
It's in a certain place in her life, and I think in a lot of people's life, where she has this detachment and willingness to, like, put her own needs on the shelf for everyone else. She's willing to just take crap from everyone, and then all of a sudden she finds an outlet for all of this, like, pent-up rage and overflow of emotion that comes from that. And in Agretzko, it's singing metal music like a god. And yeah, for me it was singing. But I even worked, like, in the corporate world for more years than I want to talk about.
Yeah, my condolences.
Right? Yeah. But during that time, even there's a section in Agretzko where a couple of, like, high-powered women managers took her under their wing. They were strong and, like, assertive and smart and beautiful. And that happened to me too when I was doing that. I was in the IT industry, and 90% of that workforce is men. You know, so it was like, these women are, they're directors. I was a manager. They're directors. And I was just, oh, they're so awesome. they helped me kind of, like, find myself and stand up for myself and say, like, hey, why are you being a doormat? The whole of Agretzko is just really relatable for me. And pretty much probably anyone that has a 9-to-5 office job, because, like, you react to that environment in one of several ways, right? Like, pure rage, is what I did.
Often internal. You'd want to actually, if it's not internal, you're not exactly staying in the corporate world very long.
Exactly. Yeah. Or you repress it until you explode. Or, like, complete detachment.
Yep.
Or you completely drink the Kool-Aid and you buy into corporate structure and kissing butt and, you know, all of that stuff. But Agretzko is just, like, intensely funny to me because it captures all that. And it captures women pretty well. I don't think it was written by a woman, though, which is weird. But, themes of learning to speak up for yourself and stuff. I love it.
Yeah. It's sort of like a welcome change, isn't it? Especially, I think anime walks this tightrope of what is appropriate and what's not appropriate. And there's a lot of animes that aren't appropriate that are just kind of like, well, this is us. And the not appropriate ones are often very, especially the sort of the ones that started in the 80s and 90s often very misogynistic and things like that. And they just don't shy away from it. Dragon Ball comes to mind. There's all sorts of things that are wrong about anime that we could talk about forever, really. But
product of the time, right? Yeah.
Totally. And I think, well, not just that, but you speak before about sort of being a doormat and things. I guess animes back then were like that because we allowed them to be like that.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah, I've just had a look. I've read the comic book. It's out through Oni Press, and I remember it just being a lot of fun. Why do you think people should check this out?
I think because it's something different, because you see a female character being angry, and that's not something that you get to see in a way that is not only permissive but empowering. And
right. Yeah.
I think that alone is reason to watch it. But it's often too that this person is not a perfect character. She screws up a lot and makes a lot of mistakes. And I think that more people need to see characters that are flawed, especially women, even if they're little kitty cat fox creatures or whatever that sing metal, something. Yeah.
Which is great because women often make some of the best female singers. So, and metal singers as well. Do you have a favorite metal singer?
Ooh, you know what? I don't. I feel like I've been really out of touch with metal music, but I was.
Something listenable kind of gave that away.
Oh my gosh, yes. No, I went through a very big metal phase, but it was mostly like really crazy stuff like GWAR and Trivium and In Flames and stuff like that. But yeah.
Right, sort of the late 90s, early aughts stuff.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, I think I'm guilty of that as well. I think what's great about this, what you've chosen, is that I feel like there needs to be more of this of media of that just represents women, people of color, et cetera, et cetera, who can be outraged, who don't feel like they need to repress it. I mean, as a white, straight male, I can go on a rage, I can go on a rant, and, I'm not going to be, pinned down to being called that I'm acting, inverted commas, hysterical, or I'm acting crazy, or I'm not a person of color, and it's not, don't have to have that fear of, being locked up or anything like that. So I feel like the more that we allow for positive representation of any sort of minority group where they can feel like they can show their emotions, even the more negative emotions, then it's only a good thing, right?
Exactly. Yeah, it normalizes the whole human experience. It makes them appear fully human, which is nice,
Yeah, totally. Yeah. Now, my something watchable is Technoman, if you're if you're that hardcore into anime, Tekkaman, as it's known in Japan.
Yes. Invaders attacked in the year 2087.
Space Knights, you're all that stands between Darkon and the destruction of Earth.
Technoman! Earth shall belong to me!
You'll never get this planet as long as I am here to defend it.
You said you were finding it hard to find Technoman, Melissa. Had you not seen it before?
I had never seen it. I'd never heard of it. I am woefully undereducated when it comes to anime, so it was actually really nice to check it out. I eventually found it on YouTube. I was trying to find it on all the streaming services, couldn't find anything. I was like, I guess I'll try YouTube. Sure enough, bam, right on YouTube.
And how deep did you go with it?
I think I'm like, I want to say eight or 10 episodes in, full episodes, I guess.
Yeah. It's a whole thing, isn't it?
Yeah, it's interesting because it reminded me of some of the other ones that I grew up watching, but more in the movie categories.
Okay,
But the show, I could just see like, this is following this very well-done formula. But it seems very confident in itself, more so than some of the other ones.
Yeah, and originally it was just sort of a self-contained season. There is a second season, but I don't think I've ever been able to find it, so I've not seen it. But it's very, it lends well to binging for sure because it's almost like a giant movie. From memory, I think there's only about maybe 30 episodes or something along those lines. But for those listening who haven't checked out Technoman, aka Tekkaman, it is basically about these space knights who, well, initially it's about this invasion that's, you know, going to take over the Earth, et cetera, et cetera. And then it's this invasion force is led by these sort of evil space knights. And then there's sort of one space knight that's facing up to them called Blade. Now, Blade, spoilers, by the way, Melissa, sorry. you find out later on that the evil space knights are actually members of Blade's family. So... Sorry.
No, that's fine.
But I think the reveal around how that comes about will still leave you surprised terms of how sci-fi this goes. The only sort of problem I think anyone would have with this this show, apart from it just being a lot of fun, is that the love interest, and I can't remember her name, but Blade's love interest, she kind of loses herself in him as you get further into the show, which is really disappointing because when she's initially introduced, she's kind of this, you know, this bold woman. She's supposedly a scientist. She's working with a group to help with the defense of Earth and all those sorts of things. But she loses herself in this guy. This guy who, for the most part, isn't really interested at all. So it's kind of, I guess, a hallmark of a lot of anime shows, though.
Yeah, yeah. That's funny, though, because I actually really liked her. There's a part where she's like, I'm a scientist and I'm doing this. And at one point, the guy's acting up and she punches him in the face. And I was like, oh, that's interesting.
Yeah. I think it's interesting for the 90s as well, which is when it came out, because I don't... I don't really know if back then they were consciously thinking, you know, empowered woman punching inappropriate dude in the face, or if they were just doing it because they think it's, oh, a woman punching a man, ha, 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 you know?
Yeah, she's hysterical. Yeah, I don't know.
yeah, definitely. So, Melissa, present your something readable.
Okay, so something readable is Sex Criminals. I'm sure you've probably heard or read that before, right?
Yeah,
probably.
I've heard of it, and I read up on it, but I haven't read it. And present your pitch.
All right, so Sex Criminals is a comic series written by Matt Fraction and I think illustrated by Chip Zdarsky, I believe.
Yep, yeah, that's right.
Okay, it's been a while since I read it, but I believe it has ended, by the way. I don't usually start comic series unless I know they've ended. I don't know why. It's just because I don't have to keep buying things.
To be honest, I think it's pretty smart. Otherwise, you just go into this whole rabbit hole that just never ends.
Exactly. So it's a comic in which the two main characters, Suze and John, hook up one night, and then they discover that they both have the same kind of... I guess we could call it a superpower. both of them can stop time when they have an orgasm. Okay, and because they have
isn't that how it works for everyone?
Right, for a little bit. And because they've now found each other or another person who can do it, they think, what are the odds? You know, this is fated. And they decide to pair up and maybe rob a bank, just, you know, push the limits of their powers and stuff. So that's the synopsis, generally speaking. But the reason I like it is because if you read the whole series, it exists at this like great intersection of sexuality, self-worth, mental image. And it's all wrapped up in this like darkly funny universe. And it is funny and it is sex positive. And it's one of the few comics I think that contains sex but doesn't glamorize it. So
it's in the comic crowd, we sort of call it cheesecake stuff, where it's, you know, woman in a bikini fighting bad guys and her nipples are hard for the entire story. God knows why. And it's just kind of like, it's either, you know, one of two things. It's obviously they want to sell books or, or there's people that don't quite understand how nipples work.
Right. That's true. If you wear spandex, automatically that's how the nipples work. but this comic, I think that's why I like this comic. And then also, the thing about the sex and the representation of women and men too, it's got these sexual moments that are mortifying or funny or lonely or weird or empty, and some are like revelatory, and it's a very approachable and realistic portrayal of sex. And you know, we've already talked about like women aren't really written well in comics as fully functioning autonomous characters, and I think Matt Fraction does a really good job of writing something intensely relatable for both sexes, like loneliness being a big theme, or the idea that sex alone doesn't cure loneliness, or that feeling of being broken and out of place and stuff. And it's all people learning to get out of their own way and be happy. And yeah, even dealing with trauma and a bunch of things like that. It's just really self-aware. It breaks the fourth wall a lot, which I love. I know it's cliche, but I do. but and they're not great people. Again, they're all flawed sort of people. But I think talking about sex in the way that it is in Sex Criminals is something that needs to be done. It needs to be normalized, not glamorized, but making it a comedy and throwing in like really flawed, messed up characters. It breaks the taboo and takes the bite out of it, which I wish more people would do, because I don't know, maybe we'd be less repressed over here. Maybe less violent. I don't know.
I'm pretty sure it's not just America.
Oh, sure. Yes. That's true. But we have guns and that's bad.
Well,
bad combo. Bad combo.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So my something readable is Baystars. Now, most of our listeners are probably familiar with the Netflix series Baystars. So we're talking about the manga, or is it manga? One of those. Now, it features an anthropomorphic sort of race of different creatures. So basically any type of mammal is anthropomorphized in this manga. Now, it depicts this kind of this school where the herbivores go as well as the carnivores go. And it initially starts with this sort of this murder that happens. So, bearing in mind that with this show, apparently there's a truce between herbivores and carnivores, and that truce is so ingrained in this fictional sort of society that any kind of carnivores eating herbivores is just a big no-no. It's a bit of a taboo. So one of the herbivores is engorged, I guess you could say, devoured, and that sort of starts this kind of very paranoid element, this kind of very closed-in and claustrophobic element of the herbivores not really trusting the carnivores. And we eventually sort of lead on to the main characters. Now, the main character is Legoshi. He's sort of this towering grey wolf. He is sort of going through adolescence. And one of the things about this series is with adolescence for carnivores, it sets them on this sort of this bloodlust that they sort of have to repress. And for some reason, he decides to bite onto this white rabbit who her name is Haru. And it sort of just he becomes obsessed with her, sexually obsessed with her, which just sort of starts this sort of strange kind of trajectory of sex and in like devouring someone is sort of intertwined in this world. And but it's interesting. I think it's just an interesting sort of series to read. If you don't want to read it, the sort of the first manga book is it's sort of most of it's covered in the first season of the show anyway on Netflix. So it's bizarre, but in a good way, which I think sort of raises questions about a whole range of things, about sort of repressing stuff, about sex, about, I mean, there's sort of elements that are revealed that Haru, the white rabbit, she's promiscuous, and there's sort of But not in a way that's that I guess is slutty. She's just, you know, she just owns herself. She's that's how she wants to live, and mm-hmm. and I guess it sort of raises questions around, like, it makes us question our own what we deem acceptable sexually. So, yeah, you said on Twitter if you could mention sex a whole lot, and I think I've mentioned it more than you have.
Six. I have to catch up with you real quick. I'm just going to say it for like 15 times now. we start the podcast off and I'm just going, okay, sex. No, but I actually found that whole dynamic really engaging, specifically Lugosi, because you don't know what to expect from him at the beginning. And they do a lot of really, they do quite a bit of subversion of expectations, especially mm-hmm. in the first few. And then you kind of get the sense that, okay, some weird stuff is going to happen. And I actually just got, you know, a little bit past that point of him meeting Haru and becoming sort of obsessed and talking about the softness and, you know, all of these things that he's thinking about. And, it's really engaging, I think, probably primarily because he's holding back that feral instinct. Yeah. And yeah, it creates this really great tension. And I don't know, I found it really engaging. So even though I've been reading it, I probably will end up finishing it because I'm really kind of taken with it.
Yeah. I feel the same apprehension about buying a whole bunch of manga books as probably the same way that you feel about comic books, because, you know, mm-hmm. once you buy one, if you like that one, then you have about 30 other of the fuckers to buy. So,
yes.
so it's, yeah, it's, you know, cross to bear. So mm-hmm. Melissa, present your something listenable.
Okay, so my something listenable is an album called Solid State by Jonathan Coulton. It sounds weird, but it is a sci-fi concept album.
Wake up. The day's begun. Reach out. Take the sun, shine it on the face of
his music is usually, if you're not familiar with it, very funny. Generally, he was sort of made famous by the internet, makes music for internet culture. He wrote Still Alive and the music from the Portal series of games, songs about World of Warcraft, stuff like that. Yeah. But what I like about Solid State is that it's not that. It's a break from all that. And it's examining the potential future of getting lost in the internet, or rather, like, losing ourselves to the internet.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, so Solid State is this great concept album. It doesn't have the typical pompousness that concept albums sometimes have.
Yeah.
But I got to see him perform it live when I lived in Seattle. And Amy Mann was there singing with him. And it was definitely just one of my favorite concerts. But there's a lot to unpack in some of these songs.
I wouldn't say you've converted me as a fan, but you can't help but appreciate the production value of everything. And so he does it all, does he? So he doesn't have anyone that mixes or masters it?
I don't know. I think for this one, he might have had somebody mix and master it, but normally he doesn't.
Okay,
Yeah. But I think it's interesting. Like, every song is this sort of vignette or a different story from a different perspective. So have, you know, a story from the perspective of an internet troll or a robot or a corporate stooge or a self-aware octopus or whatever. There's all kinds of stuff, but it's all very dystopian. That's what caught my attention was, like, in the first song, there's a line that says, like, red is for focus, blue is to not get upset. All eyes watching, no one's noticed me yet. I think it's, you know, it's talking about living in a society where we are medicated just to deal with things and feeling invisible despite the constant surveillance. As sad as that image is, the song is actually really peaceful and dreamy. And this guy is thinking about breaking out of the everyday nonsense. So it's, you know, it's a really great capture of both of those things, the dystopia, but also this idea of, like, you know, what if we didn't do this? you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So I love it a lot. It's great.
Yeah. It's, there's definitely a lot of styles in there. Like you said, with that album, it sort of kicks off with this almost, ambient sort of ABM sort of vibe mm-hmm. to it. And then it gets into more of like a rockier pop tracks later on. And then, yeah, mm-hmm. it just, you know, goes in and out of different genres. So mm-hmm. I feel like there's something here for everyone. And it might also be a great gateway drug to people checking out other sort of more alternative and more, you know, internet-based sort of musicians and things like that that aren't mm-hmm. that where they might not necessarily be as popular. So, mm-hmm. yeah, he should keep at it. I'm sure he'll go far.
Oh, yeah, he's really good. I think, yeah. One of the things that I love about him is he was a guy who was what we call a code monkey in IT. He was a developer, and he okay. just decided, I want out of this, and I'm going to teach myself yep. how to write songs. I don't know how, but I'm going to teach myself by writing one song a week. And that's how he got good at it. That's how he ended up, I guess, getting famous for it. And yeah. Oh, what's even more interesting, you might like this, is there is a comic book based on this album written right. by Matt. Yeah, written by Matt Fraction.
oh, yeah. Nice.
Yeah. I have it. I haven't had a chance to read it yet, but it's all based on the themes around like, each of the songs and stuff. And I want to crack into it at some point.
Excellent. All right. So my something listenable is Peeping Tom.
Yes.
Which is nowhere near as inappropriate as people might think. It is an album by the great alternative music master and maestro himself, Mike Patton. So if you don't know Mike Patton, I'd say you're either you're not a millennial or you've been asleep for the last sort of 30 years. Peeping Tom is very much Mike Patton's sort of foray into what he considers like R&B and hip-hop and dub and sort of all mashed together with a bit of rock thrown in as well.
Yes.
It's such a good album because it's just something you can really get into. It has so many well-known artists which people might recognize from sort of the late 90s and early 2000s. I mean, just to name a few, Massive Attack, Norah Jones, Amon Tobin. Did you pick up Norah Jones in listening to it?
And Massive Attack, yes.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. So it is just, as far as if white people are going to make hip-hop, it should sound like this.
I love that. I love it. Agreed. No, I loved it, honestly. As soon as I heard the lip work, the beatboxing, the beginning of Mojo, yep. and I was like, I'm sold. I like this already. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. The great thing about Mike Patton, have you seen Mike Patton live with Faith No More or Mr. Bungle or Tomahawk?
No. No.
So the interesting thing about Mike Patton is all the sort of the screams, the odd vocals and all those sorts of things, minus sort of that the beatboxing you're referring to, he does mm-hmm. all of it. All of the sort of weird electronics and weird sounds and things like that, he does all of it as really? Well, live as well. So he also, just for a bit of trivia, recorded and I guess sort of released singing the theme song to the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles game, which is about to come out as well. So
yes.
He's just one of those people that is just so, just endless talent. He's is always up there for me.
I love that. It's not fair. They're not allowed to be that freaking talented. But, you know, I liked a lot of it, honestly. I think 5 Seconds was probably one of my favorites because it had this, like, horror movie organ stuff and then random bits of that metal style mixed in with the hip hop. It was crazy cool. I liked it.
Yeah.
There were a lot of styles in there too, but all like they had kind of this through line of rock and hip hop mostly, but then they kind of, I mean, there was one that sounded sort of bossa nova-y at one point.
Yeah, that's possible.
Yeah, there's so many styles. I thought it was great.
Yeah. I mean, if you liked the more sort of rockier elements to it, I would recommend that you check out this group called Dub Trio. So whenever you hear sort of the actual instruments in this, that's this these three guys in this band that just sort of play like dub rock, and it's them playing throughout the whole album. And I'm pretty sure they were the band that toured with him when he did a tour to release this as well.
Ooh, cool.
So we're going to do the verdicts now. So, Melissa, were any of my three pitches your kind of weird?
Yes. Peeping Tom for sure. Beastars I'm enamored with. I think I need time to warm up to Technoman.
Yeah.
Or Techoman, whatever you want to call it. But for sure, Beastars I'm really taken with, and Peeping Tom I'll probably add to my Spotify playlist.
Excellent. Do you have something to ask me?
Did any of these kind of float your boat? What do you think?
I think Sex Criminals is definitely my kind of weird. I think Akatsuko is definitely my kind of weird. Regretfully, I don't think Jonathan Coulton's album is my kind of weird.
That makes sense.
there's so much internet music out there. I think it's more just I just don't have time to consume it. And I think that, I have time to listen to it, but I feel like this album requires repeat listening to sort of get what I need out of it to sort of for it to make sense for me.
That makes sense. It's not necessarily easy listening or anything. So that makes sense.
Oh, don't get me wrong. I listen to a lot of really sort of ambient droney stuff to post and progressive rock. So I'm all for listening to weird. I just don't know if I'm my fear here is that I'm going to like it a lot and then going to want to get into all the other stuff he's done. So that's my fear.
Well, the good news is if you ever do, it's not like really anything else he's done. So you might be safe, but you never know.
All right. We're going to go to a quick sponsor break. And then when we get back, I'm going to have a chat to Melissa to find out what she's been doing.
Hello again, everyone. Producer Andy here again. Last time, I asked you to visit sodaandtelepaths.com to read all the latest on comics, science fiction, and horror. Listen, I've been looking at the stats, and I couldn't help but notice that not all of you went to the site. That's okay. You don't have to. But it would mean a tremendous amount to me if you did. As a reminder, on sodaandtelepaths.com, you can read all the site's interviews with people in the entertainment industry. There are movie and comic reviews. There are opinion pieces. It's enlightening, entertaining, and enlightening. Or do you not want to know about that stuff? Perhaps you have better things to be doing on the internet. Perhaps you know the keyboard shortcut to open up an incognito browser in Chrome. It's Control Shift N. Or maybe you have some self-respect. Maybe you don't consider that one dude who thumbs up all your weird comments on Pornhub your best friend. And if you are one of those wholesome types, then get yourself over to sodaandtelepaths.com. Okay? Please don't make me ask again.
So, Melissa, you're a voice actor. tell me a bit about what your sort of your average day for a voice actor consists of, because off the mic you were talking about your horrible sleep patterns where you stay up till 3 a.m. every morning. So
yes.
What is a voice actor's day for someone who does it full time? What does that look like?
That's a good question. So a lot of the work that you get in voice acting comes out of LA. And I live in Minnesota. So that means that I can wake up later.
Okay. Yep.
So, you know, I wake up at a lazy time Central Time, but at a decent time Pacific Time. So when I get up, I usually have a few auditions in my mailbox that I will go through from either from my manager or from my agent or both. I'll go through and just, you know, you just give it a shot. As a voice actor, you get a lot of rejection, like a lot.
I can imagine. I mean, there's, do you think that's from certain apps and platforms making it too accessible now that it's, there's so much, so many people are, I guess, applying and auditioning for roles or?
Oh man, that's a complicated question. I think if anything, it's good that the market is kind of oversaturated right now. Because, a lot of the climate has changed for voice actors. It used to be you need to be in LA to do this. But with COVID and everything else that went on, remote work, everybody's working remote, everybody's working from home. So that, you know, what that does is it takes all of the stuff out of LA and it gives other people an opportunity to break into things, including people of color and underrepresented people. And so that has actually been kind of nice.
In terms of with voice acting, now I, so my sort of perception about how things might happen might be wrong and you can correct me, but I would assume, and this is just from, you know, interviews I've listened of sort of, you know, well-known voice actors that initially they would, you know, they might have gone to acting school or studied acting in college or something like that. And then they might have gone into, you know, auditioning for actual acting roles. And then as a consequence, yes, they may have gotten some acting roles, but they've also fallen into the voice acting market. How did that journey look for you?
Oh, for me, it started with singing. So in college, my degrees rather are in vocal performance and vocal pedagogy. I was I was a classical singer when I started. And then at some point I was like, oh God, I have student loans and therefore I need to get a real quote unquote real job. So I worked in IT for 10 years, but I left IT to pursue voice acting, actually. I got sick of the stress, sick of, you know, you kind of have to sell your whole life to X tech company that shall not be named.
I don't think they're listening. I don't think I've reached quite that point with this podcast where the, you know, the CEOs of X tech company are listening in.
You never know. They're everywhere. So I left that and I said, you know what? I haven't taken a vacation in like 10 years. So I did.
Okay.
And in that time I started listening to audiobooks and that's what turned me on to voice acting was that I said, oh my gosh, this is a job. And I just went full bore into that. And I was a saver anyway. So I had, you know, some time and money on my hands. So, and so I just hopped fully into it and I said, okay, if I'm not kind of up in the air doing this in 6 months, I'm just going to quit. But
So let's timeline that. So you were in IT for 10 years. You sort of went on that holiday. You sort of had a reset mentally, I'd imagine. How did you go about getting into voice acting? What year was this, out of curiosity?
This was not that long ago. It feels like a long time ago. 2 years? This will be, I just started my third year. So about 2 years. I think honestly, I'm the type of person that just, I will just jump in and do it and figure it out as I go along. And that's exactly what I did. I went to a website for audiobooks and I said, well, I'm going to try this. And then after that, I realized audiobooks are really hard. And
they're, I feel like they're hard, but I feel like it's a tough sell for a voice actor that is just doing the reading part. Mm-hmm. I guess it's an all right sell for a voice actor who's talented enough to sort of do the narration, do the different characters and things like that. But you can't, every audiobook can't have the sort of the production level and the money put behind it, like what Sandman, for instance. I think that's probably the biggest one. And that whole I've listened to the first sort of half of that, and that is just amazing. But not all of them can be like that. So
no, and they are not. They are not. The majority of them are not.
Yeah, there's some really horrible ones. I believe the. Have you ever listened to Stephen Fry reads Harry Potter?
No.
It is the worst, the absolute worst. Yeah, it's quite horrible. My wife, who is a huge Harry Potter fan, to the level of, I would say, a fanatic, to the point where if anything comes out that has the Harry Potter sort of relationship that isn't written by the original author, she who shall not be named, she just won't check it out. But she checked out the audiobook of Harry Potter, or one of them, and and then I checked it out, and it is horrible. It's pretty bad.
Oh,
there are just
no.
some that don't resonate well.
No, they really don't. They're just so much work. That's why I left audiobooks, and I fell into video games, and that's really what I do. I do video games and commercials and animated series mostly.
I saw that. Was it MechWarrior 5?
Mm-hmm.
Is that right? Yep.
Yeah, MechWarrior, Aliens, Fireteam, Magic the Gathering, Arena, Grand Blue Fantasy, stuff like that.
Okay.
So I do either really cutesy characters or like really mean badass characters and like nothing in between.
So can you give me sort of, with two sort of characters, can you give me your range? And
sure.
But in a way that's going to blow my mind.
Let's see. There's a video game that I do called Rose and Locket, where I play a mother and her daughter. So I play both, and I talk to myself all the time. So it'll be something like, Mom, where are you? And then she'll say, I'm right here, baby. I'm right here. And then you have that nice little play between the two.
That is so fucked up. Oh, dear. wow. And did you say you did more sort of masculine characters as well? Or
yeah, sometimes. Yeah, I do. There's a couple of, can I say this? Live action TV shows where I play some fairly masculine characters. But they're under NDA, so I can't say which ones they are, but yes.
Right. Okay. Fair enough. Not a problem. Yeah. So we might as well talk about COVID. Hey, has that even affected you, in your line of work or?
I was already kind of a hermit. For me, not a whole lot. I will say that, I don't know. I can't say fortunately because I don't think there's anything fortunate about COVID. My work definitely went up because LA closed. And, you know, what's interesting that's happening for us is now things are going international. You know, there's a lot of games right now out of Poland and the UK and stuff like that. So, it's just becoming a little bit more diverse, and in that way, it's, you know, it's all right. But
I guess I assumed the UK, but Poland, really?
Yeah. Dying Light games are based out of Poland. A couple other ones too. Yeah.
Okay. Right. I want to get your thoughts on this. COVID has been horrible, especially for your country. Mm-hmm. But I think from a working perspective, I feel like a missed opportunity here is for things to go back to the way they were, in terms of how people work. I mean, ideally, it would be nice if people looked at things and go, oh, I can, like an employer looks at it and goes, or someone looking to hire a voice actor goes, oh, I can get that person and they have what I'm looking for, but they live at 800 miles away. You know what I mean? Yes. Versus the old sort of trope of, oh, they need to come to work. You know, and there's no logical reason behind it, especially in your line of work. You've got the equipment at home. Like, why do you need to come into a studio?
Exactly. Well, yeah. I think people cling to those older ways. And for some things I get, especially when you're talking about, you know, I know several voice actors from Australia and they don't, you know, the taxation is different. Actors guilds and unions are different, you know, some of that stuff I get, but when it's,
I don't even think we have one.
Yeah. But when it's within the country, I really don't see why. So even when I worked in IT, I worked from home. So before ever becoming a voice actor, I worked from home and I lived in Seattle and I worked for a company based out of Austin, Texas. And there's no reason why everyone can't do that. I don't think.
Yeah.
I have heard that most people favor a hybrid style. Like some people really do like to be able or have the option to go into the office and then, you know, have the option to stay home sometimes. And I don't see why we can't do that.
Do you feel like you're wired a bit differently to someone else? And you, I mean, you said you like being the hermit. Do you just feel like that you don't need as much of that human interaction? What is it?
Yeah, probably. I mean, I have anxiety, I have PTSD, so I have a lot of stuff going on in my head. But that's why I get it out with acting, right? But overall, yeah, I think I just need less. I personally need less contact. But even me, like even the COVID is even getting to me, the isolation.
Okay, yeah.
And that's how you know it's getting bad, right? It's like if me, a self-proclaimed hermit, is like, I can see some people.
I don't want to see some people, but I could.
Exactly. Yeah. I'd like the option. Sure.
Yeah.
Then, you know, it's getting pretty bad. But yeah, I think I just wired a little bit differently. I've always been, my dad made it a point to, because he was the same way, to say, hey, there's a really big difference between being lonely and being alone. And,
good advice.
And we're just big about being alone and being fine with that, you know? Yeah.
So what are you working on at the moment? Oh, that's right. You can't tell me NDAs. Well, if there is something you can allude to, by all means, you have the floor. But what do you feel that is probably your sort of your swan song or your biggest thing that you're known for as a voice actor that you think people should check out if they haven't already?
Sure. I think probably Grand Blue Fantasy Versus is a big one that people really love. They love that character. Play Yuel. And she's a downloadable character. Aliens Fire Team is one that is especially close to my heart because I wanted to be Ripley when I was little. And this is the closest I could get.
I don't think I played that one. I played...
it's not out yet.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. It's coming.
Hang on. Ellen Ripley or Amanda Ripley is in that one.
Amanda Ripley was in Alien Isolation, I believe.
Yeah, and there's always, I was just asking because there's always sort of, there's the odd interview or the odd article that kind of alludes to a sequel. So I was just wondering if somehow Amanda had continued on that game. Obviously not.
No, new team entirely. But there's a lot of stuff on IGN this month. It's Aliens Month or whatever for IGN. So they're doing a lot of stuff about that. But man, I love that movie. I love all of those movies. And so I'm like super stoked to be able to be part of that universe now. So when it comes out, I'm just going to be so thrilled.
Well, I mean, in terms of powerful women, I don't think there's anything, you know, more original than sort of Ellen Ripley taking on, you know, chest bursting, devouring aliens.
Exactly. With her brains. You know what I mean? Like not even a whole lot of brawn necessarily. That's what I love about it too.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's right. Alien the first one is my favorite because
Nice.
In a way, when you get down to the bare bones of that film, it's not as much a science fiction film as it is sort of more a slasher film where or a invasion film, like an invasion home film where the killer is out there. You can't see them. You can sort of, you can feel them with the tension, but, and how, you know, Ripley has to try and outsmart that alien that's killing everyone.
Yes, I love that. I agree. I feel like it's more of a horror movie than a sci-fi movie.
So, Melissa, where can people find you on your socials?
I am Melissa Medina VO on everywhere. Twitter, Instagram, TikTok now. I have one video on TikTok. It's so pathetic. I just started.
but, I don't have a TikTok, so.
It's for the youngins. I don't know. It's what all the young kids are doing. But yeah, so Melissa Medina VO, and then my website is just hearmelissa.com. And I'm very easy to find. I'm very loud and opinionated on the internet. So yeah, come find me and say hello.
Nothing wrong with that. That's what appealed to me, and that's why I just had to have you on.
Thank you for having me. This has been a blast.
No worries. Now, after this episode, we're going to be going to a once a fortnight sort of format. So everyone, don't go anywhere. Don't freak out. I'm still here. I'm still talking to people about their favorite weird things. So that's still going to happen, but it's going to come out fortnightly. I'd like to say that there's sort of this kind of grand master scheme as to why it's going fortnightly. But I'm a dad. School holidays are coming up, and that's the best excuse I can come from. So, Melissa, thank you very much for being on today's podcast. If you haven't already, go check out My Kind of Weird podcast on wherever you get your podcast from. Melissa, thanks again for joining me.
Thank you. You're my kind of weird. Thank you.
And that's a wrap. See you guys in a fortnight.